All right, good afternoon. This is Monday, February 22nd, and this is the regular meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. I have called the meeting to order. We are meeting virtually, and the first item on our agenda would be approval of the consent calendar, which I think is going to be rolled up here shortly. Their adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature or items that have come before the Board of Commissioners previously. If commissioners or staff wish to highlight an item, they may do so now. Otherwise, I will entertain a motion for approval.
Mr. Chair, I move for approval as of the consent calendar as submitted.
And I will second that.
All right, I will call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
I heard three ayes. The motion carries. The consent calendar is adopted. Moving on, we have a couple of decision action items. The first one is a request for replacement of the Lint Tahoe with a similar vehicle, and I don't know is Lieutenant Cameron or Sheriff Landers here to address the board?
I think we both are. I'll let Lieutenant Cameron.
Yeah, both are. All right, double duty.
Yeah, good afternoon. I appreciate the board taking the time. So what we're looking to do is replace our Lint Tahoe. That vehicle was originally purchased about a decade ago, and it was for our Lint detective at that time. When Lint disbanded back in 2015, each agency that had a vehicle, the vehicle was turned over to that agency for their use. So during that time, it's been our mainly a surveillance vehicle. It pulls a lot of double duty. It's kind of a Swiss Army knife for us. It's everything from surveillance to, you know, little things like training and other aspects. What we found is having a vehicle like this is extremely important to operation. Not to give away too many details, but there's a lot of time when you just can't have a police looking vehicle go into a situation. So we use that to get eyes on when we've had problems with the car clouts or burglaries. We've also used that vehicle for that type of thing that you can be in a neighborhood and not really stand out. So that's the goal, is to replace this. When you don't have it, you find out how much you miss it. So the interesting thing about it is this vehicle is a replacement, and it's not on the replacement schedule. What we did with this last vehicle is when it needed service, we paid for it at the time because the use was really all over the place. It would go for a period of time and not be used, and be used quite a bit. So it wouldn't be part of the replacement cycle, which is an annual cost. What the sheriff's office would do, and we worked with Mark Molnack on this, search out funding, is one of our vehicles that was scheduled to be replaced and its replacement vehicle was purchased, was totaled when in a windstorm, back right before the fires, when a tree came down on it. After everything was done and said with that, that's $26,500. And then the Lint vehicle sold for $6,600. And we have sought out approval from the Lint board to use that money for a similar type vehicle. So what we're asking for is the use of the insurance money and then the purchase from, the sale of the Lint Tahoe to put $33,000 towards a used vehicle that would be similar duty for surveillance type purposes. Did I hit it, Sheriff?
I think you hit it. We'll see if we have any questions.
All right. Well, I know there were some questions at the staff meeting going from right to left on my screen. Commissioner Jacobson, questions or comments?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to make sure I understand this kind of in reading through the letter. So you're coming to us to ask that you can use the $26,500 that was the payout to the vehicle that was destroyed during the Labor Day storms, plus the $6,600 that you got for selling the previous Lint vehicle, to use that to purchase a new to you vehicle. Is that accurate?
That is, yeah. I'm sorry, yeah, that's correct. It's going to be a used vehicle. Obviously, we don't want to give out the details of what we're looking at currently, because that would kind of defeat the purpose of a public meeting. But yeah, it would be a used vehicle similar to what we currently had for the Lent vehicle, and it wouldn't be any additional money than what you see has been out here. I think Mark Molnick had the idea of using the insurance payout, which we weren't expecting to get anyhow, and that vehicle was already replaced as it was set to go in. It just had months to go before it was going out anyhow, so just kind of a windfall, I guess, so to speak, and good timing.
So my second question then is, why isn't this just going through our normal budget process and vehicle replacement process that we do every year within our budget?
I think this is unique because it's not set in the, we don't pay annually for the vehicle replacement cost. This is a vehicle that we acquired differently than we do our normal patrol vehicles, since it was acquired through the Lent funds. And it's not part of annual replacement costs. So basically, when this one's at the end of life in 10, 12 years, whenever it is, you know, there won't be a, we'll have to come and do something else again to try to determine how to replace it at that point. The only ongoing cost is the fuel and insurance and, you know, maintenance that goes into it. And the difference with the ones that come out of the budget is we do the annual cost for replacement built in annually for those. And I think that's just a list that comes to you to approved during the budget process for annual budget replacement. Plus, it just so happened to come kind of during budget time, but really this could happen at any point during the year.
Okay, and then my last question is, so because we don't have a true Lent detective at this point, correct? So this is just used by various detectives within the Sheriff's Department, is that right?
Yeah, it'd be various detectives, but it would also be, I'm sorry, Sheriff, go ahead.
No, go ahead, you're better. I was just gonna say it could be used by detectives, depending on what's going on, or deputies. It's the current vehicle, or well, when we had it, was used by a number of people to do different, depending on what the operation is and who's gonna use it. So it's just, it's not assigned to any one specific person. However, we do have that third person built in there, and if I guess if it ever did come back to where we had a third detective, that this vehicle would be assigned to that person if something happened, if we ever got a drug team or something similar set up again.
Okay, because the value of this vehicle is that it's, you know, not marked, right? So various people use that when they're doing work that requires a vehicle that's unmarked.
Correct. Not marked and doesn't look like anything that we currently have.
Doesn't,
different color.
Yeah,
and
okay. Discreet. All right. That's all of my questions. Thanks.
Commissioner Hall.
I think my questions have been answered either in the presentation or through Commissioner Jacobson's questions. Thank you.
All right, I guess I would just say that from my standpoint, I originally had the same question, why isn't this a part of the normal vehicle replacement process? But in effect, it wasn't a part of the assessment to the vehicle replacement fund. Therefore, it makes sense to replace it outside of that process. And I guess my last question is, $33,100 you believe is adequate to purchase the discreet looking vehicle that you need or would like?
Yes, Mark Molnick has been kind of looking around for us in the event that this was approved and said we could definitely find something that we could have in that price range for sure.
Okay. Well, the request makes sense to me now. I'll look to my fellow commissioners for input or a motion.
I'm willing to make a motion, but could Christy, can you take us back to the agenda so that I can rob the wording from it? Thank you.
Well, I'll entertain a motion for approval to replace the Lent Tahoe vehicle with a similar use vehicle as presented in the sheriff's memorandum.
I second that.
All right. Any other discussion? All right, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
All right, three ayes, that motion is approved, and good luck.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next item is an item I know that's of special interest to Commissioner Hall, but certainly of interest to all three of the commissioners, and that would be a letter of support for House Bill 2337, declaring racism a public health crisis in Oregon. And then we'll follow that up with a discussion of a resolution declaring racism a public health crisis in Lincoln County. Commissioner Hall, I'll let you start out.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2337 is one of many bills that has been introduced in the current legislative session. And I was approached by a representative of the Oregon Public Health Association to see if our board would consider doing a letter of support. And this is coming forward right now because although it is not formally scheduled yet, it is expected that the first hearing on the bill is going to take place on March 2nd. And essentially this the legislation does three things. It declares racism to be a public health crisis in Oregon. It acknowledges Oregon's racist history. A lot of people know, but I find a lot of people don't know that while many state constitutions in the 19th century were adopted with various racist clauses, such as forbidding African Americans to serve on juries, Oregon's, sadly, was unique in that African Americans were actually prohibited from living in the state. And the reason the sponsors feel it important to acknowledge this history is its current impact on policies and systems that perpetuate institutional racism. And finally, it articulates investments and strategies needed to address health inequities among Black, Indigenous, and people of color in Oregon and Oregon tribes. Some of the main strategies in brief are giving the Oregon Health Authority the means to collect data on race, ethnicity, language, and disability status in Oregon and how that impacts people's access to services. It would have local public health authorities provide data to the Oregon Health Authority, which they will use to develop a statewide mobile health unit plan. And these mobile units will be deployed on a regional basis, focused on providing basic health, behavioral health, oral health, and connection to other wraparound services, specifically for BIPOC communities. The bill has already gained a lot of endorsements, including the College of Public Health and Human Sciences at OSU, the Center for Health Innovation at OSU, the Oregon chapter of the NAACP, the Oregon Public Health Association, Easter Seals of Oregon, and many, many others. Last month, I presented a request to our Public Health Advisory Council meeting that they essentially support our endorsement of this bill. You know, some members had questions about some of the specifics in the bill, though they unanimously agreed that it was worthy of support for support in concept. I believe that's what this letter does today. You know, I know both of you know, and anybody who's really been involved with the legislative process knows that the final product that emerges at the end of the process usually ends up being significantly different from what it looked like in the beginning. But if you both agree, I think it is worthwhile for us to go on record in support of this measure. I'd be glad to entertain any comments or questions on this letter of support.
Commissioner Jacobson, any thoughts or comments, questions?
I certainly support the letter that is presented here. I would just also add, though, that I think we need to look at developing, you know, a similar type of thing from within the county. While I certainly, like I said, I'm supportive of supporting the state's efforts in doing this by sending a letter, I think we need to look internally at our own county and look at maybe declaring a similar state of emergency for racism as well. So I would just say that while I know time is of the essence on getting this letter out so that it's relevant to the bill going forward, I would also suggest that maybe we work with staff and have something put together for us to consider for a local order doing this as well. And we can send maybe this letter off in the meantime if there's support for the board, but then work on creating our own order internal to the county as well.
Mr. Chair, could I respond on that second point?
Please do.
Yeah, I absolutely am in support of that. And at the same time, I presented this request to the Public Health Advisory Committee. I also asked them to weigh in on whether the county should do a local resolution. And they were really supportive of that as well. You know, literally hundreds of cities and counties, as well as several other states coast to coast, have made this declaration. There was actually a bill introduced in Congress in January that would declare nationally racism to be a public health crisis. But I'm absolutely with Commissioner Jacobson that, you know, it's a statement of values and intent for us to do this at the staff level. And I have contacted Florence, our portal, and, you know, as we all know, public health is really straining right now. So I've already been researching model declarations introduced in other counties, including our coastal neighbor Coos County. And I'm going to come up with kind of a preliminary draft, run it by staff, and hope to have that ready to bring back to the board relatively soon.
All right. Well, I would certainly echo the comments of both of you. I think as Commissioner Jacobson and certainly you indicated, Commissioner Hall, to some degree, time is of the essence to get our support for this House bill on the record. I also think that this sets a framework for staff to develop a much more comprehensive policy and statement for the county. Certainly, the COVID outbreak has highlighted some of the particular challenges for the BIPOC population and communities, and the support of our Public Health Advisory Council, I think, adds to the value of this type of declaration and potential policy and future actions by the county. So I would say this is a very good initial first step. Any other comments from commissioners? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion. Commissioner Mr. Hall.
Chair. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move we approve the proposed letter of support for House Bill 2337, declaring racism a public health crisis in Oregon.
And I will second that motion.
All right. Any other comments? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Commissioner Jacobson, you're either frozen or on mute.
Sorry, I said aye. I guess I was muted. Aye.
That's all right. And my ears, I'm not sure. Sometimes they fail me, but I did hear three ayes. That motion is approved, and certainly the critical issue will come back before us soon. All right, next item on our agenda is the State Transportation Fund and Section 5310 grant applications. I believe Cinda Bruce, our transit director, is here to provide us with, I believe it's additional information.
Yes, I'm here to ask for your approval of our 21-23 biennial 5310 and STF applications. So this will be the final biennium that STF will be separate from STIF, because during the legislative process, they've put them together. So in the future, it'll be a little simpler. So with our Section 5310 application, that grant is for two Category B buses to replace old high mileage buses, about 323,000 and 306,000 miles respectively. And it'll be about another 12 to 18 months before we receive the replacement buses. So these will get a few more miles on them. They will be well used. We have a great fleet service that assists us in maintaining them, so we can get to this level of miles safely. The grant is for $340,974 with a $39,026 required match for a total project cost of $380,000. The second project in this grant is a preventive maintenance application. This is to assist with cleaning the exteriors of the buses, not on a regular basis, but like on a weekly basis, having somebody come in that that cleans the outside of the buses. And in doing so, they add like a wax type, they add chemicals that that prolong the life of the outside of our vehicles in this salty air conditions. Also, they will also be cleaning the exteriors, interiors, and the cement flooring of our bus shelters. These are also to kind of assist with the COVID, to keep things a little cleaner, to make not only extend the lifespan, but also make customers a little more comfortable in using the services and the shelters. Pretty soon we're gonna be getting electrostatic foggers that we will be using to clean the insides, to sanitize the insides of the buses. That's going to be a great thing. At the current time, we have a professional doing it. So that's going to be going away. We're getting the correct equipment and retrofitting the buses for the electrostatic foggers. And we're going to be able to sanitize three buses at a time. It's going to be great. So that's the first application. The second application is our STF application. And that application is for the match for the two Category B buses and for program operations. And the total STF funding will be $227,161.
Anything additional for us?
Not unless you have questions.
Yeah, commissioners, any questions?
None from me, thank you.
Thank you.
So, Cinda, before you go on, I guess I'll confess, I know we talked about grants and the good job you're doing as the transit director at a recent meeting. Help me distinguish what we're doing here versus what we did then.
Oh my gosh, I just have so many grants, Doug. I mean, Commissioner Hunt, because
I answer to both.
Because our program depends quite a bit on grants.
Okay, so this is just, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but this is just a different series of grants.
That's correct.
Okay.
And there was one other, I think it went on the consent calendar, that was grant 33777. It's an amendment number 2. And actually that amendment was to extend the grant from June 30, 2021 to June 30, 2022, because of the COVID, we chose not to implement the midday run in between Lincoln and Benton counties. So we'll be starting that on July 1. We'll be getting marketing out. We have some big things planned.
Okay. Is there additional grant information you wish to present at this time?
No, that's it.
Okay. Any final questions, Commissioner Hall, Commissioner Jacobson? Okay. I guess I'll look to Council Belmont. Do we need a motion to approve this or add it to the consent calendar?
Well, let's talk to Cinda about timing. Can this wait for the consent calendar next week, or do you need something done today?
I actually need this, your approval today. Now, let me see.
I think we can do that.
When the agreement comes through, this is just so I can submit the county's application as well. There will be agreements coming back for your signatures. So right now I'm asking for your approval to submit the applications to the state. Then they will send us applications, which you will get to sign.
So I think just a motion to authorize Cinda to proceed would be fine.
So Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move to authorize Director Bruce to proceed with the STF and Section 5310 grant applications for the 2021-2023 biennium.
And I muted again. I will second that.
You had me scared.
We heard you. All right. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Director Bruce, go and submit those applications and be successful.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're down to reports. And first report, as is our tradition, is the County Public Health COVID-19 update. And I believe we have Deputy Public Health Director Portal on the call, and I believe some other representatives from, I guess the other representatives are for the Echo Mountain fire. Anyhow, go ahead, Florence.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Yes, the usual, I think this week we are starting with really good news on both fronts, both on the front of the case count. As you can see, we are getting very low. In the past 2 weeks, we had only 18 cases reporting to us, which is very good. And that actually takes us into the low risk category, which, you know, we just decided to jump from high to low, which is very exciting. And I'm sure it's going to be very exciting to our community members and business community as well. You can scroll down. So the test positivity rate is getting low as well. As you may know, we have established a partnership with the University of Oregon. That comes every other week and provide testing for our community. I can give you the exact details offline because I realize that I do not have them with me. So anyways, very positive signs. We can go down, as you will see, overall for February, we only have 55 cases reported to us and one week to go, which is very exciting. So as mentioned earlier, our 18 cases over the past 2 weeks led us to the low-risk category, as our case count per 100,000 is under 50 at 37.3 cases per 100,000 population. You can scroll down. On the other good news front, it's about vaccines, because last week was pretty stressful and anxiety producing, as because of the weather in the middle part of the country, the shipments of Moderna vaccine never left, and they only were able to leave the factory yesterday and made it to us this morning, which is very, very exciting. So even though we had to postpone and reschedule first and second dose clinics that were supposed to happen last week, we're able to confirm that all of those clinics that had been rescheduled will be taking place this week. And so as you can see, here are the numbers that have been reported through the Oregon Health Authority in terms of the total people we've been able to vaccinate thus far. We have over 6,600 people in the process of being vaccinated or fully vaccinated, which is very exciting. We are also hopefully going to get a little bit more visibility in terms of how many vaccines we are going to be able to receive on a weekly basis. The Oregon Health Authority has had some communication from the federal government letting them know that they can anticipate a supply of vaccine that is a little bit more stable in the coming weeks. So we ought to anticipate about 1,200 doses a week starting this week. So that is very exciting, and everybody's ready to vaccinate people, you know, as soon as we can. So this week, just so you know, we have three first dose clinics happening, one tomorrow at the fairgrounds in Newport, as well as at the Taft Fire Station tomorrow as well. Another one in Lincoln City at the Taft Fire Station on Wednesday. And then we have three second dose clinics happening Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at the fairgrounds, and plenty of second dose clinic for long-term care facilities that we had to postpone until this week. So we will be plenty busy and excited to be.
All right.
I have, I think on the next page, maybe there were, so Commissioner Jacobson, we tried to give you a sense of kind of how many vaccines we're receiving and how many we were, yeah, there you go. You might want to possibly make it a little bit bigger if you can. Thank you. So I was working on this this morning, and this is just for February. And I'm so sorry that we do not have a graph as of yet. We had plenty to do to notify people this morning of the availability of vaccines and all that. But as you can see, the first week of February, so that's going to be the first two columns on the left, remember, we received 0 doses of prime and then 200 doses of second, and those doses were distributed to the jail and to PacWest ambulance for second dose clinics. The week after that, after we had sent this letter to the state, we received 900 prime doses that we were able, can you scroll down just a tiny bit? That we were, thank you, that we were able to administer that particular, well, so that's too much. Can you scroll back up just a little bit so I can see total administered? Yes, thank you, awesome. So as you can see, we received 900 that week and we administered 900 that week. And then I'm gonna keep on going with the prime doses. So as you can see, this past week, we had a deficit in the inventory and because we were awaiting those vaccines that just arrived today. And we will, so we will be able to use all those doses plus 400 additional doses this week for first dose clinic. I hope this makes sense. That was the best I could do at this time. It's more of a planning type document than a presentation document, but I thought I would put it out there for you to see what we're dealing with, the amount of clinics that we have to transfer vaccines to, you know, the prime versus second doses, and it's not necessarily clear when we have the transfer into the system what is what. But as you can see, you know, we haven't been sitting on vaccines. We're also finding out that we will be receiving through Samaritan 396 doses of the Pfizer vaccine next week. And we decided to likely put a clinic together next Wednesday in order to do this. So not only do we have to, you know, juggle prime second of the Moderna vaccine, and now we're adding Pfizer to the mix. But we're just excited to be able to get people vaccinated at this point. So this is what I've got.
Questions or comments from commissioners? Commissioner Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is all fantastic, wonderful news. Thank you. And just could you refresh my memory, please, Florence? Is this week the movement week or next week?
So I believe we agreed this morning that the movement week is this week.
On Friday, we will go mm-hmm. to low risk. Wow.
Yes. Yes,
excellent.
We are. And I believe we had also a document with the packet. Yeah, there you go.
And the state has updated some of these criteria, correct?
I think so, yes. Yeah. I'm sorry, I've been so immersed into the vaccines that I believe this is the latest version that was provided to you all.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it might be. Anything else, Commissioner Hall?
Nope, I thank you.
You're welcome, Commissioner Jacobson.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One is, Beck, I just checked my inbox to make sure I wasn't missing something, but I don't think we've heard from the state yet confirming that we actually go into low risk. Unless Florence, have you received notification?
We received the case count earlier today. I didn't realize that we, hold on a minute.
I know ordinarily we get some kind of an email from Leah Horner, who's the, assistant to the governor.
Yeah, and it's a little early for that. Usually we receive it Tuesday or Wednesday. I think it's obvious, you know, where the numbers are going. However, I just wanted to caution people and make it clear that we have not received that confirmation yet that we are actually moving into that category. It looks like we are, but before people are planning their 300 people outdoor dining activity or whatever it is they're looking forward to, I would just say that, you know, we have not received that official announcement that we are moving into that low risk category. So, you know, maybe hold your enthusiasm just for maybe 24 or 48 hours so we can confirm that with the state. I think the data does speak for itself, but we do have to have the state confirm that. It's not up to commissioners which category we are in like it was previously. They look at the numbers and they tell us. So it's quite exciting to be going down that far. I think last week when we spoke to the students, you were a little more hesitant saying it could go either way. We just weren't sure yet. So it's exciting that we are going down. But like I said, I just want to have a slight bit of caution until we wait for the state to confirm that.
So what we received from the state this morning was just the school metrics confirming the case count of 37.2.
And I will say that as soon as myself, or I'm sure the other commissioners, receive something official from the state, usually it comes out on Tuesday, or Wednesday, we will of course have Casey push that out so that everybody can know that it's official. My other comment I had is thank you so much. I know you're super busy for working on presenting the vaccine data in the way you did. I think it's just really helpful for people to see how much the doses we get fluctuate, and that's even before winter weather delayed them. I mean, it's just up and down all over the place, so thank you for doing that. The other thing I think would be helpful, maybe on an ongoing update to commissioners every week, is every single week I get comments from the public that have, you know, filled out the wait list or filled out the wait list for someone they know that maybe are not, you know, internet savvy or don't have an email address or what have you. And what we always, you know, what I always hear back is, I haven't heard anything. I'm 80 plus, I'm 75 plus, I'm whatever I am, I've heard nothing back. So maybe if we could get an update each week, just where are we on that wait list? Are we 2/3 of our way down? Are we 1/3 of our way down? I think that might be helpful just to give some assurance to people that are on it and are trying to patiently wait, but just aren't sure if they've been passed over or kind of what's happening. I know we also have a lot of people calling the call center, which can be really overloaded, trying to just confirm that they're on the wait list. So I think just having some idea of where we are at in terms of working through that would be helpful.
Okay, well, I can give you, so before we had this fancy smart sheet sign up on the website, which has at this time over 10,000 people signed up on, we had what we call the original waitlist. And so we are going through that waitlist and going through, so we're finishing up going through our original like 1,000 plus waitlist. And I believe later this afternoon, we just wanted to give a chance to the folks who were on the original waitlist to sign up for this week. And then we will start opening up to folks on the new waitlist. The other thing to understand is that we still have phase 1A eligible people trickling in. So what's happening is that even though the vaccine becomes available to more people, people who were eligible prior to now are still eligible to receive the vaccine. So especially if we receive like, you know, notifications from people who either care for people who live with disabilities or people who have disabilities themselves, we tend to prioritize those phase 1A folks. But we're making our way through those lists, and I know it's creating a lot of anxiety for people, and I'm so sorry, but I just want to reiterate that once you have signed up on this wait list, we will contact you. And I just also want to say that sometimes what happens is that we reach out to folks and then we have emails that are bouncing back. So then we have to start another list. So I have actually been calling people myself who had an email that bounced back to make sure that first we were correcting that email and second that I could, that we could get them scheduled for the vaccine. So it's we're really working hard at this. I think our systems are getting more and more efficient, and hopefully with a more steady flow of vaccines, we will be able to have a steadier flow of clinics and so on.
Thanks, Florence. I think just what you said, that you're still, you know, just finishing up the first wait list from 75 plus and not into the smart sheet yet. I think that is super helpful for people to understand, because obviously if you're on the smart sheet one, you know that you weren't passed over. They just haven't worked your way to you yet. So thank you. That's helpful.
And I also wanted to say, Commissioner Jacobson, that I know, you know, I've been also like trying to help with answering emails through the call center emails. And I understand that people are getting frustrated with our call center just because they have to wait for quite a bit. And sometimes there is music, sometimes there is no music. They don't really know what to expect. I can tell you that the call center is fully staffed and that people are really manning the phones from 9 to 5. And that unfortunately, I believe like there is a limited amount of incoming calls at any times for the county as a whole. And so that explains also what is happening with the wait time on the phone. So we're working the best with what we have. And this definitely was not designed for a pandemic and a fire and all sorts of.
Thank you, Florence. I know all of you are working super, super hard. And I think especially for our senior citizens that have been, you know, mostly isolated and waiting for so long, I think just to be so close and then not sure how close you are and just worried that maybe you were passed on the list or just that anxiety of, did I miss something or did I miss a phone call or did I do that form right or whatever. I think sometimes they just want some reassurance, you know, that they are indeed on the list. So I appreciate everything you're doing. And I think just getting an update every week on kind of where we are working through that list might help some of them to know that, you know, they just simply haven't been gotten to yet.
Yes, we will make sure to do this.
Thank you.
All right. I'll echo the comment. I think the information that you've provided, Florence, is incredibly helpful. I think it also speaks to how incredibly complex the logistics of this entire process is. And if I remember, or if I was told correctly, I think that the staff spent a very long weekend literally working Saturday and Sunday to try to reach out to people because of the, at the time, cancellation of the clinic that is now clinics that have now been rescheduled. So again, recognition of the tremendous efforts that you and the staff and other volunteers have made in an effort to get shots in the arms. And personal story. I think I may have said this before, but my mother, who's 97 and lives in a Portland metropolitan area, I won't specify necessarily which county, but she finally got her second dose last week, 97 years old. So I think that gives a little bit of perspective on, I think, how good a job our county is doing in getting shots in the arms. And also on that point, I've had several conversations with people as I'm out in public that have gotten a vaccination, either the first or the second, that have been extraordinarily complimentary of the process. I know there are people that the staff may get some adverse comments about having to get the vaccination, although I don't think anybody is actually required to, but I know there's a lot of negativity about getting the vaccination, but everybody that I've talked to that has gotten a vaccination has been complimentary about the process. Please be aware of that and share that with your staff. I believe Director Austin is also on this meeting. And again, please share those comments with the staff. It's incredibly complex. And I think the information that's been provided gives some real insight into the true complexity of what we're doing and how well it's being done. So thank you. Anything else on COVID? All right, we'll move on. The next item on the agenda is the Echo Mountain Complex fire update. And I know we have some representatives, I believe, from, is it ODOT, or I'm not sure who's going to start out or who to introduce. I know we have, I believe, Jeff Gilbert.
Commissioners, if I might, this is Wayne Belmont, yeah. County Council.
Please just a quick do, update. Wayne.
And we do have representatives actually from Oregon Department of Human Services, ODHS, that are here today.
Oh, okay, I got the wrong department, sorry.
That's okay. And I'll just move into the debris removal and cleanup report is that activities are underway, and we do have representatives from ODOT who will be with us next week. So you'll get a direct update from them next week. So I won't spend too much time talking about that. I know Casey Miller will add a couple of comments about that particular process. We are encouraging people, since they are doing work up there right now, to take advantage of the rights of entry and signing up for that particular process. We wanted to continue to encourage that. But let me start off with just talking a little bit about the direct assistance for housing. The project on Logan Road is well underway. Construction is happening out there. They're putting in all the infrastructure needed to put the units out there. And the latest word that we have heard is that by February 26th, this coming Friday, they should have that together, and then within 5 days of that time frame, they'll be moving the units in, and folks can occupy them. They have a little bit more work to do, but it looks like generally within the next week and a half, we're going to have those units available for victims. So that's important. Second thing is that we've been working on the long-term recovery activities, and Commissioner Jacobson and I have been talking to various folks in terms of some of the funding that will be available to provide services for folks, victims, on the long-term recovery aspects of our response. And so stay tuned to that. We're going to have a little bit more information, I think, next week on where we're at with that. And then finally, you have Shelby Houston here for MASS, the Multi-Agency Shelter Transition Team, and the folks from DHS. We're going to talk a little bit about that process and the progress we're making there. So with that, I'm going to turn it over, I think, first to Casey Miller, if he wants to provide any additional updates on debris removal and cleanup. And if not, we'll move into Shelby and folks from DHS.
Thanks, everyone. Yes, just real quickly, looking to North Lincoln Rebuilds, you'll see links there as well for MAST. Shelby and Jeff and Yvonne will be talking about that later. But as we look for the cleanup, it's important for individuals who have submitted their ROEs or who would still like to have the Debris Management Task Force, ODOT, clean their properties. It is beginning to happen. There is tree removal, and they are literally moving debris on some of these properties. So it's not too late to submit that right of entry and also submit that information to ODOT. It's kind of a two-step process, but on our cleanup section, we can see there are links, and One of the most important links here is this wildfire hotline, or the number rather, that if somebody has not submitted an ROE or has withdrawn their ROE, they can call that hotline and they'll help walk people through the process. So it's very, very important to take advantage of this opportunity, because once ODOT's gone, I believe they're going to be gone. And this is a service that's provided for free to these property owners. So information is on our county website, and in addition to how to reach out to MAST, for example. So I'll pass that back to you, Wayne.
And so now I think for the update that we're going to get on MAST, start with Shelby and then folks from DHS.
Before we go there, if I may, this is Doug. Casey, you said that ODOT was going to be gone.
Sorry about that, Doug. Yes, I think what I'm trying to say is that
they're not going to be here forever.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, yes. I think they will be leaving. So eventually they will be leaving. So it's important that people get the ROE on record if they continue or change their mind and decide they would like to have ODOT address the debris removal on their property.
Yeah, you got it, Chair. That's it.
Okay, I just didn't want people to think that ODOT was leaving at the end of the month or some other day soon. Okay, with that, Shelby, give us some additional information about the MAST.
Great. Well, thanks for having me on today, and I'm happy to do this update. So we are about halfway done with the interviews. We've completed 52 interviews so far, and according to our records, there is 56 interviews left to complete. And this is kind of a hard number to nail down because it changes every day. So these numbers are as of today. I would like to just kind of give an update on what the MAST has come to be as far as community partners and representatives, and then go over some of the successes we've experienced with connecting people to resources, and then talk about the barriers and needs that we're identifying. And I'll touch base a little bit on the next steps, but I'd like to hand that over to the other folks we have on the call from ODHS to kind of talk about that for a broader perspective. So the MAST has come to be me and Celia August, and she's from OSU Extension Service. She's the admin assistant. We also have been working with reps from FEMA, HUD, the DHS Self-Sufficiency Office, the local one, Lincoln County School District, the CSC, our local Aging and Disability Resource Connection, our local Housing Authority, and CORE, which is a mental health outreach team. Some of the successes we've been experiencing, I'd like to highlight two big ones. So the first is just having FEMA on the interviews has been so crucial. We're finding a lot of people that were requested to submit additional documentation for their claim and they didn't, or they were denied by FEMA and they didn't appeal the decision. And our FEMA rep within the interview is able to pull up a survivor household's file and detail in a step-by-step format what exactly needs to happen for them to receive an approval if they are able to receive an approval. And most of the time, it's a simple process that households are recommended to go through to get this additional financial assistance. So this has opened up a lot of funding opportunities for households that have went through this program, which they previously thought that they weren't eligible for. Another big success that I'd like to highlight is just the local collaborations we've had with community partners. It really has been amazing to work with so many different agencies for the benefit of just helping our survivor households. So first, Kelly with the school district. She's a disaster recovery coordinator for the North Area Schools. She's been a crucial part of this team because of her ability to support survivor households who have children. We've been able to identify and enroll a few kids into school that weren't enrolled this yet in this school year, so that's been pretty neat. Also, Roberta, the housing placement advocate from the CSC, has been in a lot of our interviews and has been helping households go through that coordinated entry process to see what housing-related programs her agency may be able to offer them. Also, Nancy, which is the front support at our local DHS self-sufficiency office, has been so helpful just being in on the interviews and explaining what benefits that survivor households may qualify for, like SNAP or OHP, and how they can apply for these benefits. Then Andrea, the program supervisor with our local Aging and Disability Resource Connection, has been crucial with survivor households who are seniors or are disabled. She can help explain the programs that they may be able to access through her agency and also how to get engaged with them. And then finally, CORE, a local mental health outreach team, they've been providing some of the in-between case management tasks that the MAST does not have the capacity to provide internally. They've also been responding to survivor households who have asked for additional mental health resources. And in an effort to stay rooted in trauma-informed practices, we've tried to include individual CORE outreach workers in the mass interviews if we're able to identify that they have had contact with a survivor household. And this just helps to further build trust and rapport and support. So those are the successes. The barriers and needs, I'm going to talk about three main ones. So the first is just the lack of affordable housing. There are not a lot of places for these folks to move out of the hotels into, and also for not just the folks in the hotels, but the folks living in temporary or substandard housing up in the Otis area. There's just not a lot of choices for them right now, and that's because of a bunch of different factors kind of compounded all by COVID and the restrictions around evictions and moving and all of that. It's just kind of all one big knot right now. Another big need that we're identifying is a place to put RVs or fifth wheels. This, I understand that the county has allowed some additional opportunities, I believe a year from the fires, some flexibility around where you place RVs or fifth wheels, but there's just still like finding a place for them has been really tough. And this was a need before the wildfires. And so then again, it's just been complicated and become even more difficult after the wildfires. Then another need that we're seeing pop up is storage. Survivor households are receiving a lot of donations, but the hotel rooms are small. And at this point, I've talked with several households that have like packed their hotel rooms to the brim and their cars to the brim and now just can't accept donations. And, you know, so they've lost everything, but they can't accept more things that they're getting donated because they just don't have a place to put them. So those are the big needs and barriers. The timeline. So like I said, we're about halfway done with the interviews. And the MAST will continue until the interviews with the survivor households are complete or until the next phase of the recovery process starts, which is disaster case management. So when those disaster case managers come on board, they will take over for the MAST. And we hope that this will be sometime in March or April, but I'm going to let some of the other folks on this call speak to that a little bit more. And the next step, so from where I'm standing, I'm seeing the disaster case management as that one-on-one long-term support that most of the survivor households are needing in order to move to the next phase of the recovery process, which would be permanent housing. I do believe a shelter liaison was hired and is now working in the hotels as a go-between for survivor households, hotel staff, and the various recovery teams. And I also believe another shelter liaison is in the process of being hired and should be starting soon. Also worth noting, I am turning over the MAST lead, which just means the person asking the questions in the interviews, over to Yvonne, who is on this call, so that I was only able to accommodate my other job within the county for so long, but I will be still working, you know, within a collaboration with the CORE team and kind of just there for support for all of the MAST members as this process continues.
All right, Shelby, anything more from you, or should we look to either Jeff or Yvonne for update.
Yeah, no more for me. I think going to Jeff or Yvonne would be helpful.
All right. I saw Jeff's microphone turn green first, so you're next, Jeff, unless you defer to Yvonne. We can't hear you. Your microphone's green, but we can't hear you.
That better? Can you hear me?
Much better. Thank you.
Oh, multiple places to mute yourself. Sorry about that. Actually, I'll defer to Yvonne. She can give you some more specific information localized, and then I can provide the disaster case management, the long-term recovery plan that the state has organized. So Yvonne, if you are on, why don't you take the ball at this point in time, and I'll pick up where you leave off.
Yeah, hi. Is there anything specific that we're looking for a report on? I think Shelby did a great job of reporting how MAST is going. I will be taking over next week, and we will be conducting MAST on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for Lincoln County. So I don't know if there's any specific questions for me that I can answer.
Commissioners, questions of Yvonne at this point? Jake?
Yeah, I'm looking it up, okay?
I have a couple of questions. One is, so other than Yvonne, switching roles with Shelby, is the MAST team staying the same?
The MAST team will be staying the same. I will be conducting interviews Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but everybody will be still the same as it's been with Shelby. Same forms, same people, same referrals.
And then my second question, this might be to you, Yvonne, or Jeff, I'm not sure. Where are we with those disaster case managers? I know that the advertising for those positions was put out, and are we, you know, a month away, 3 months away? Kind of what's our ballpark range here on when those people will be hired and working?
I can actually field that question. So I'm not exactly sure where any of those are posted because we haven't posted them yet. So we actually just received notification today from FEMA that the grant was officially awarded. We received a letter on February 1st from Region 10, FEMA Region 10, but that's just the region giving authorization. Since that point in time, it had to then go to the Department of Homeland Security for approval, the Office of Management and Budget. And since the grant is over $1 million, it's actually 6.5 in total. It had to be run through a process where Congress was notified. All of those three steps have now ensued, and we were just notified as of earlier today, actually, that the grant will be fully awarded. So at this point in time, moving forward, what ends up occurring is that we're working on a statewide RFP, request for proposal. That's right now sitting in contracts and procurement were for the state so that they can authorize the RFP to send it out. That'll be announced here very shortly, which will allow us to select an NGO for the implementation of the grant. The grant's fairly complicated, as you can imagine. There's a lot of reporting that goes into a federal grant and a lot of financial management. And so we need to select an NGO that has the capacity to do so. And within that piece, we then will be able to select disaster case managements for all of the counties. We are trying to expedite that process. FEMA keeps telling us that we're moving at light speed, but it feels like we're still stuck in molasses in winter, to be perfectly honest, from the state's perspective. And my boss, Ed Flick, is not the kind of individual that usually takes patience, tolerates it well. So we are trying to expedite folks in a process that was not originally intended, but certainly allows us to utilize some of those grant funds to get counties' disaster case managers a lot faster, because we don't feel like we're moving through the process as quickly as we need to. I think there's a lot of great work that's out there. One of the greatest pieces, of course, is just housing doesn't exist, but there's a lot of wraparound services that disaster case management can bring to the table that the counties just need to have access to, quite frankly, and we'd like to expedite that as soon as possible. So that request has been elevated to Faribor's Pak Suresh, our director for the Department of Human Services, and I believe that he's weighing the options right now for us, and I'm guessing we'll probably get an authorization to move forward to begin utilizing those grant funds even before the NGO is selected. But I can give you guys more insight to that. In terms of a little situational awareness, I don't know how often you guys take a look at just some of the numbers so that you're cognizant in terms of the human impact. But right now, our sheltering profile in Lincoln County comprises 7 hotels. Those are 5 in Lincoln City and 2 in Newport. You have 94 rooms for those individuals and 174 individual folks, right? 174 individual people comprise that. They receive 3 meals a day. B'nai B'rith Camp is a remarkable organization, and they have taken over since the 17th of October, the feeding, 3 meals a day for all of those individuals in the county. They do so remarkably with a lot of praise. Very high quality nutrition comes out from that entire team. So the hope is, of course, that through the MAST process, which is the initial process, and the long-term recovery groups that get established, that the disaster case management becomes kind of, if you will, to create an analogy, in a pond, if you threw a rock into the middle of a pond, disaster case management becomes that rock, upon which there are concentric circles then that begin to ebb out from that one central location. So those disaster case managers become the epicenter for focusing all attention for the families through their entire long-term recovery, which at this point in time will be 18 months. Now, we're hoping that, of course, in 18 months, everybody gets back on their feet and where they're going. The difficult prospect, of course, once again, is housing. But aside from that, we will have that program in place for an entire 18 months. And the hope is to get back to the point at hand. What is the time frame? The time frame, if we went through the standard process of unfolding the grant through the NGO that I originally described, probably would not see any disaster case managers hitting Lincoln until April. If we, however, go with my boss's estimation in terms of bringing some people on board before we do the RFP process or concurrently with the RFP process, undoubtedly, by next month, you guys will see a disaster case manager arrive in Lincoln to kind of head that process up.
Thank you. That is super helpful. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Any other questions? Okay. I'm quite loquacious, but I don't want to dominate a conversation. So please ask any questions that you might have, and I'll try to give you the best answer I have.
Additional questions or comments? Commissioner Hall or Commissioner Jacobson?
I don't think I have any more questions at this time. It's been a very informative and very helpful presentation.
Yes, I would add that although you may be loquacious, Jeff, you are very effective in your loquaciousness.
Thank you, sir.
I guess the only question I have, and I may have missed this, but what are some of the hurdles that I guess at this point Shelby has encountered and looking forward that Yvonne will encounter as far as trying to reach out to these families to do those interviews? And is there anything we can do to help?
That's a great question. And some of the pieces that we're bringing on board, we just hired just this last week, Cindy Bruckhart. She is our new shelter liaison in the county. She just literally began at the end of last week. And her primary point of contact was to be in contact with all the general managers of the hotels. And I meet with them every week, all the hotel general managers, on Wednesday at 1 o'clock, just to see kind of what issues might be surrounding. But unfortunately, I'm not physically in Lincoln. I wish I could be. Unfortunately, I have to be at multiple locations at the same time. So our shelter liaisons are selected to be the boots on the ground, if you will, to make contact with folks, to ameliorate some of the bigger issues that we see happening in the sheltering profile, right? Folks aren't just used to being in a hotel. I mean, most of us are in a hotel for maybe a week, 2 weeks at most on vacation, but suddenly it becomes 5-6 months at your home. And some of the issues that you might have at home, separate from others, begin to really manifest larger issues when you're all close together, right? And that becomes a very difficult process. And also the hotels are not used to having people live in them for 5 straight months, right? There's a lot of issues that then come to pass that maybe you don't recognize in the first month, but after 5 months, it happens. So the shelter liaisons are meant to meet with folks individually, provide information to them, assist with the MAST and the DCM process when that comes to pass, and also help kind of restore peace and calm at some of the hotels and or any feeding issues that might come to pass. So Cindy is boots on the ground. She started the process. She's already generating some really great reports. And joining her as soon as our HR background pay equity process completes itself, she'll have a colleague to join her. So we'll have two in Lincoln, and that'll be really good coverage for the families that are there and a great conduit of information. So they'll be able to help get people scheduled, pass along information that we have from any source, quite frankly, and expedite the process.
All right. Well, that's good. Go ahead, Commissioner Jacobson.
One more question. Not that I anticipate any issues with these individuals you're hiring, but do they report directly to you? Are you the point of contact and supervisor for them?
I am their immediate supervisor, yes.
Okay, great. I just thought that would be helpful to know as we try to kind of understand the structure here with these new people coming on. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, so my official title, I'm the regional emergency coordinator. So Micah Gadel and I are the two recs for Oregon at this point in time. He takes Southern Oregon, I take Northern Oregon. So Lincoln falls within my privy. And then we're actually in the process of trying to get posted our own Lincoln County cell, social service emergency liaison, which is Yvonne, right? Yvonne graciously has spread herself thin across multiple counties at this point in time. So she's serving not only as the primary in Marion, which is what she was hired for, but she's also serving Lynn and Lincoln at this point in time. Lincoln has a large enough population to where we advocated for Lincoln to have its very own cell, and that was authorized. And so we're now just waiting for that position to post. And like all good human resources, it's slow, right? HR is a bit slow. And so once we post that position, however, we will move quickly to fill that so that Lincoln will have its own cell that I will oversee. I'll personally supervise that person in addition to the two shelter liaisons. And then we'll also be having case managers that will work in that field as well that I will oversee as additionally.
All right, well, I will thank you, Jeff, for advocating for our county and to get additional support people here. I know that Shelby, you'll certainly, I think, be relieved to some degree to be able to hand off some of those duties to Yvonne. And I have found this report very informational. So I'm not going to let you off the hook, Shelby. My father was a PhD, which I know meant that he was a doctor, although he never liked to be called a doctor because he wasn't a medical doctor. So you've got some initials after your name. What do they mean?
Well, the MPH means Masters of Public Health, and then the CADCR is I'm a registered drug and alcohol counseling intern.
Okay. Well, good work, and thank you all three, particularly Jeff and Yvonne, for taking time to join us this afternoon. It's very helpful and much appreciated. So thank you all.
Very welcome. It's a pleasure. And please don't hesitate. If you need any other insights, call us on back. We'd love to do so.
I think we got your number.
and moving forward, if you would like me to participate in any of these meetings or groups, feel free to send those invitations to my email. I'll be happy to participate.
I think we'll take you up on that. All right.
Bye now.
Thank you again. Bye now. All right. Next item would be commissioner reports. Commissioner Jacobson.
As Wayne mentioned previously, him and I, as well as some other partners, at first we were working on simply going after some e-board money that was sent from the e-board to Business Oregon to give out to wildfire-affected communities for costs and expenses incurred that you kind of couldn't get reimbursed for or paid for through any other source. So we are working on getting that out the door, and it should be, it's kind of a first come, first serve situation. So we are trying to get that out the door this week. Only one other county has applied and it is limited funds. So we're working on getting that out the door, and then we're presented with another potential request for funding. So I had to sort out that it was indeed a different pot of money, which it is. And so we have also been asked to provide a budget directly to the state budget committee. as a wildfire-affected community for, again, expenses that we can't get reimbursed or paid for in other places. So we spent some time today ripping apart the proposal we had put together to try to put stuff directly to a budget request that we thought would be more palatable over there, that would be less palatable over on this funding source. So hopefully by the end of the week, we will have two different requests in for funding, one from Biz Oregon, one to the budget committee for funding directly related to recovery to the wildfires.
All right, good news. Commissioner Hall.
I don't have anything additional at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, I will report briefly on the meeting that I participated with Congressman Schrader last week. As is often the case in these types of meetings, there's a broad range of topics, but there were several that I think are particularly pertinent to our situation. And I'll start out with the comment that we heard earlier from Jeff Gilbert about FEMA. I lobbied the congressman to do everything he could to get FEMA to be a little more responsive. I think maybe warm up the molasses that Mr. Gilbert referred to, but certainly urged him to help in the appeal that the state is making on our behalf to have FEMA money available for those commercial properties. And he frankly, I think, was a little bit unaware, but certainly was willing to provide support for that. I also lobbied him, as did other representatives in the meeting, to make sure that that federal money comes to the local or entities, if you will, cities and counties. He was well aware of what had happened to some of the money at the state level in the last go around. So that was good to be able to get his support for that. And then also was interesting too, lots of conversation about infrastructure and in particular dam, the city of Newport's dam, and the Aquinnah Bay Bridge was a topic. And also a lot of discussion about the need for childcare, broadband, and of course, housing was a subject not only relative to the fire, but and as a general overall need in our county. So very valuable meeting, and was over an hour and a half of the congressman's time. So kudos to him for making that available for representatives, frankly, of Lincoln County only. And that would conclude my report. Anything more from either commissioner? Okay, I'll move on. Next on our agenda is public comment. Casey, can we kind of pull up what we've gotten? Casey or Christy, I'm not sure who's doing it. Helping out, there we go. All right, and those would be what input we received since our last Board of Commissioners meeting?
Yes.
All right. And again, just to clarify, at one time I thought this was just relative to the STR VRD questions, but this is public input, all public input that we've received as a board in the last week. So if you provide public input, we'll do our best to get it recorded and shown there. And if something gets overlooked, let us know. All right. Anything else from commissioners or staff? If not, we will meet again on Monday, March 1st at 3 p.m. It will be a virtual meeting of the Board of Commissioners. And until that time, we are adjourned.
See you next month.
Yeah, thank you. Good point. Bye-bye.